This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Radio.com Sports presents Bet Sweats with Joe Ostrowski, breaking down the latest in sports betting.
Ross Tucker going to be out for the rest of the show. You know, he broke down his NFL. Now it's time to break down the bread and butter of the show, college football, like I just discussed. And now college basketball, man. I have been waiting for this for 2 days, maybe plus and change. Your college basketball futures bet, I have my two that I've shared on the show. If you missed it, it's on radio.com, a big betting piece on that. Alabama at 80-1. They're all the way down to 40-1 at some books. So if you could try to grab Bama at 80-1, I would try to get them at that price before the season starts. Big game coming up, maybe in like a week and a half against Houston. So you might see that number dip if they could pull off the upset. Going to be dogs in that game. And then Boise State at around plus 300 or plus 500. I think they have a chance to win the Mountain West. Discuss that as well. You can catch that on some of the earlier Bet Sweats podcasts breaking down college basketball. But now time for your college basketball futures bet that I've been dying to hear, man. What do you got?
Okay, so I have a legitimate quasi-long shot that I love, and then I have one that's a little bit ridiculous. But the one that I really wanted to share with you is the former. And it is a team that we have not talked about at all week long. We had Gary Parrish on yesterday, never brought this team up. But the team that I think is a great dark horse to win the national championship is Oregon. They are fourth in adjusted offense per Bartorvik. I love how this team is built. Bunch of 6'5 guys like Will Richardson and Chris Duarte. And then you have a tall center. And to me, that's exactly how you build a college basketball team, where you have a bunch of guys roughly the same height and then one big, to where you are able to facilitate positionless basketball. This is a solid program that went to the Final Four not that long ago. Dana Altman's a great coach. I know losing Peyton Pritchard is rough. They may get off to a slow start, but watch out for the Ducks, especially given if Gonzaga slips a little bit, then Oregon could be that one seed out in the West. And then they may get some favorable matchups down the stretch in the NCAA tournament. But I love the Oregon Ducks here.
See, listen, I am surprised by that pick. And I'm glad you brought that up, because I haven't had a chance to really break down the Pac-12 on this show. And you know, it's not really the most intriguing conference for other college basketball podcasts. I had Oregon last year to win the title. So I love Dana Altman as a coach. You mentioned the coaching history in the NCAA tournament, the Final Four, where they beat Kansas and that Frank Mason team. They almost upset Virginia going back to 2 years ago in the NCAA tournament. Then again, everyone almost upset Virginia that year. It's Auburn and Texas Tech. I don't want to get into it. Had a lot of money on the Tigers and the Red Raiders. And of course, you're in Texas, so you understand my pain with Texas Tech. But my question with Oregon is, LJ Figueroa, he hasn't gotten the waiver yet. He's the transfer from St. John's. So maybe he gets cleared for Pac-12 play. That's an intriguing ad. I mean, if you get the value right now, I think, what price did you get Oregon at again?
2,500.
Okay, 25-1. The other question to me is like, how do you adapt to no Peyton Pritchard? So Will Richardson, I like at the point guard position. He had you know, opportunities to handle the ball last year for stretches. He can attack the basket. I think this offense is going to be good. I like Duarte, but is he ready to take the mantle from Pritchard, who they relied on so much in so many games, and he bailed them out like in so many instances? If you go back to the, I think it was on the road at Arizona down the stretch in one game. Listen, I'm not hating on the pick. I am surprised by the pick, and I like it.
This is not a bad schedule in the Pac-12, and if they do just enough and the resume is just good enough, then you eventually like those favorable matchups down the stretch. And again, the positionless basketball idea, I think, is something that Oregon will eventually embrace. It may take a little bit of time, but I'm not necessarily seeing something that suggests that they can't figure it out, you know, after enough games. And, you know, especially playing in the Pac-12, why not?
Good points, man. And if Infali Dante is able to reach that ceiling that I thought he was going to last year, and that was a part of my cap for betting Oregon to win the title. Then 25-1 is, I mean, the number's going to drop. If he becomes maybe like a 12-9 kind of guy, and you actually have a legitimate low post presence, not just a rim protector, and he could play 25 minutes a game, then it makes a ton of sense. So I'm intrigued. I did not expect that pick at all. What's your other college basketball futures bet?
So this one's a little bit sillier, so bear in mind that one. But I believe I got it at 40-1, maybe 44-1. But if we are going to be playing regional games and the championship, if I'm not mistaken, in Indianapolis with the
Correct.
Final Four, if I'm not mistaken, yeah, then one of the statistically significant variables in terms of picking the NCAA tournament is travel. Teams that don't have to travel nearly as far tend to perform a good bit better. It's a few years ago, I believe, that Yale upset Baylor for that very reason. So teams that don't have to travel as far tend to do a little bit better. And I do think Indiana can make the tournament. I think they have enough talent to do that out of the Big Ten. And if they're not having to travel as far, that might actually be a bigger advantage than we want to perhaps give it credit for.
I'm another surprising pick. And again, an Indiana team that I think has some upside. They're like 30-1 in some markets. So you're getting a little value at 40-1. They have a 5-star point guard coming in. So you lose a little bit. They lost one of their, I think Justin Smith, one of their forwards from last year. He transferred to Arkansas. But at 40-1, there is value in that number. And if you think about the Big Ten, everybody's on Illinois. Michigan State is getting Langford back, and they're getting the Marquette transfer from a couple of years back in Joey Hauser. But how do you adjust without Cassius Winston? Kind of similar to Oregon and Peyton Pritchard. Wisconsin is bringing everybody back. Nobody is talking about Wisconsin. When you thought about the Big Ten, Ed, I'm curious, did you, in terms of Wisconsin, go back from last year, how high were you on the Badgers? And what are you expecting from Wisconsin, from Bucky this season?
Well, you know, we always expect, you know, Wisconsin sort of has, this great program in terms of defense, slowing things down, all that fun stuff. And now it feels a little bit different. But the Big Ten, you know, how many teams could have potentially made the tournament, this past season before things got canceled? It's one of those deals where you have, you know, some good competition, but no one ever really stands out, it seems like, at least not in the last few years. And this may be another situation where, yeah, Wisconsin could be a favorite, but nobody is going to blow everyone else out to where all of a sudden it becomes top heavy. So, yeah, I mean, Wisconsin certainly makes sense here, but a lot of unknowns, to say the least.
Yeah. So your two college basketball futures bets, Oregon and Indiana, two intriguing teams, especially if Oregon's able to get Figueroa eligible. And we've seen it across college basketball over the last couple of days. A team you're close to that I mentioned a little bit ago, Texas Tech, got Burton eligible. He got his waiver from Wichita State. So everybody, the NCAA is just handing out waivers left and right, because who knows if we should actually be playing college basketball in November with what's going on. But I'm intrigued. I'm very surprised you caught me off guard with both those bets. And I like the college basketball breakdown. So I want to get into, and maybe we could talk about a pick or two that we both like for today's college basketball card, but I kind of want to pick your brain for a second. What's your early season betting strategy? Because for me, I usually keep my card very light. I want to see what's going on with teams and with roster turnover, and if teams adjust tempo and pace. Like you mentioned, Oregon without Pritchard could be running a completely different offense under Altman, who's one of the best coaches in the country, and they were when Pritchard was there, and a dynamite in that offense for 4 years. Seems like he was there for 20 years, just like Perry Ellis was at Kansas. So early on in college basketball, are you going to be betting a lot? Are you betting a lot here this week? Or are you just kind of looking to see how things play out?
I would not be surprised if I don't bet anything in this first week, in large part because exactly like you said, I want to research a good bit because I still feel like that there are a lot of unknowns with what we're going to see out there on the floor, you know, especially in this pandemic. But I'm also looking at pace of play and I'm looking at tempo. I think in many college basketball circles and a lot of matchups, sometimes the slower tempo tends to outperform up-tempo teams. Now, depends on talent, depends on coaching acumen, all those things. But I want to see what the pace of play is supposed to be for this season. With so many unknowns, are we going to see a slower game? Are we going to see a faster game? Who gets to dictate tempo after a few games? That's what I'm more concerned about, because if you're facing a fast team and a slow team, I tend to lean slow because of how the sport is played. But maybe that changes a little bit this year because of who's out there, who's available. And if maybe, you know, one team is a good bit deeper than another, to where they can exhaust competition. So to me, this is more of an acquisition kind of a week in terms of research, intel, but pace of play, number of possessions, that's really what I'm looking for above anything else.
It's a good point. And a game that I'm not betting, but it's a perfect example of what you're talking about, is St. Mary's against Memphis. St. Mary's loses a lot offensively, including their point guard Ford from last season. Speaking of bailing out offenses like Peyton Pritchard did for Oregon for the last 3 years, Ford did that a lot last season and in prior seasons for St. Mary's. And then you go into this Memphis game against the Tigers, and Memphis runs a high-tempo offense. Still have Boogie Ellis. He didn't really develop into the player that was going to get drafted in this past draft, so he's back. You bring in Landers Nally from Va-Tech. Even though St. Mary's has lost a lot, this line went from, I think, Memphis, it opened at around -3.5, -4, all the way up to 7.5, and I didn't bet it. It's just a great example of, again, the point that you brought up of slow tempo kind of wins out. And getting St. Mary's to keep it within 7 points when they have such a slow pace, even though they lost a lot offensively under one of the better coaches in college basketball in Bennett, I think would have been the more valuable play. Now this line's down to 6. I'm not playing it myself. But again, it's just one of those examples of when you're trying to adjust, and you're especially when you're trying to gauge college basketball early, when there is roster turnover. And, you know, Memphis didn't see necessarily all of it, but they lost to Chua, and they're getting a star-studded guy in Nally in. Usually, with that kind of an adjustment, even though St. Mary's has lost a lot offensively too, the slower-paced team that can kind of wear you down over the course of a game is the better play, especially when they're catching over 2 possessions.
Exactly right. And is that going to be the case this season? It's really hard to tell. I mean, what's the conditioning like for all of these teams? Have they practiced enough? Have there been too many interruptions with COVID concerns, or with the fact that colleges haven't been able to operate normally this season? We don't know any of those kinds of things. I mean, like, take the NFL, for instance, in terms of the totals there. We saw a lot of overs at the start of the season. Eventually, the market catches up to such indicators, but we weren't sure how offenses were going to be able to gel with a lack of offseason. And so how are these guys going to be able to play together, either with transfers, losing talent, whatever it might be? And that's why I am apprehensive to bet too much, at least from the jump, because I just want to know how pace of play is affected throughout college basketball in general. And look, some teams may be able to enforce a faster pace of play because they know their competition, that doesn't have as much, or, someone gets in foul trouble, then you can do whatever you want. Again, intel is important, especially as an analytics guy. And so that's why I will be watching a lot, and then I'll probably feel more comfortable dipping my toe in the water.
What do you typically make home court advantage when you're going through your numbers for college basketball? And like you said, you're not betting yet, so maybe you haven't made the exact adjustment that you will want to make for the college basketball season, but how much of a dip is there in home court advantage in terms of the number when it goes into the point spread?
Yeah, so just like in football, sometimes you get 2 or 3, maybe 2.5 if you're getting precise. I think also it matters, how significant the home court is, and also how far you're traveling. Just like I mentioned with the NCAA tournament, some conferences are more expansive than others. The American is called just that because it extends from sea to shining sea. Whereas if you're dealing with, say, the Ohio Valley Conference, well, all those schools are bunched together. And so you can take a simple bus ride to, the opposing gym, 1.5, 2 hours away, and it's not that big of a deal. And so travel matters a good bit in terms of how much I adjust, how far you have to go as far as that's concerned. But then also, too, how many fans can you pack into a home gym? I think that matters a good bit. Cameron Indoor, maybe there aren't a lot of fans there, but it is incredibly boisterous. That home court advantage is going to matter a good bit more than, say, a more cavernous home court where there aren't as many fans. And so you can easily power rank, just based upon what you've heard and the, historical success within blue blood programs, and you can figure it out that way. You don't want to do too much. I mean, you don't give someone 10 because of home court advantage, but it can range from, say, 2 to maybe even 6 or 7 based upon travel and also based upon how great the program is at home.